the Financial Sense Lifetime Planning Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
It is that time of the year when people start thinking about New Year's resolutions, and I'm sure on the top of the list is either losing weight, getting into shape, we're staying healthy. And that will be the subject of today's program. Joining me on the program is Dr. Erica Pitch. She's a physical therapist and she specializes in neurological disorders. She's also an open water swimmer and a dog lover. Erica, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
We all know that exercising, proper diet keeps us healthy. But I want to talk about things that we have to deal with as we get older. We may not be as flexible as we used to. Maybe we don't exercise as much as we used to. One of the things that I caught from your website that really struck me, exercise and movement are often the best medicine. They just require more time than taking a pill. Let's begin with that.
Excellent place to start.
You deal with physical therapy. You specialize in neurological disorders. I want to talk about some of the things that are important as we get into our 60s. For example, I've been working out, but recently I injured myself with a rotator cuff injury doing bar dips way too much lower than I should have. And we've all heard about people that, you know, fall, they break a hip, those kind of things. What should we be doing as we get older? In other words, what type of exercise, what type of movements, or does it really matter?
Well, there's a hierarchy of goals with exercise. If someone's starting from a point where they're not doing much movement at all or not exercising at all, then just doing any little bit of additional movement, just taking, you know, another walk around the house or just walking down the block, wherever they're starting from, just trying to move a little bit more is like the first sort of tier of improving overall wellness, is just move more, sit less. Moving up from that, if people are already active, but they're kind of wondering, well, what to do? What should I do more of? What should I do less of? That depends a lot on the individual. But in general, what we know from neuroscience research, from exercise physiology research, is that basic cardiovascular exercise, anything that uses large major muscle groups in order to elevate the heart rate, it counts as cardiovascular exercise. So brisk walking, brisk dancing, swimming, you know, running, all those things that involve large major muscle groups for 30 minutes or longer, we know that that has numerous positive effects on both the obvious, you know, cardiovascular system, but pretty much almost every system of the body benefits from it. And especially as we get older, the thing that, you know, I think a lot of us are worried about or afraid of is memory and preserving cognitive function as well as physical function. And we're learning that more and more that cardiovascular exercise can have some preservative cognitive effects in addition to physical benefits of obviously improving stamina, improving physical function. So, well, and beyond that, the other key ingredients, of course, are like strength and flexibility. So if you have a lack of range of motion, then stretching can be helpful to help you move more normally. Strengthening, I think, is people are often are afraid to work on strengthening, but it's also very important for bone density and overall function.
Let's talk about some of the common problems that people have as they age. We all hear about some of the misfortunes of people that fall, break their hips, knees going out, rotator cuffs. What are the things that we can do to either avoid those kind of injuries, or if we do have them, recover from them and strengthen?
Excellent question. So to avoid injury is, I think, the biggest thing. Like you said, with your rotator cuff injury, you kind of know why it happened. Like going too far in a bar dip is knowing how far that's supposed to be. So making sure your form is perfect when you're doing those challenging exercises. Because, you know, as we talked about, strengthening is important. But with any kind of a strength exercise or even like balance exercise for fall prevention, with a lot of those, the therapeutic dose is very close to the toxic dose, meaning it's important to be challenged. It's important to push yourself in the right way with the accurate movements, because the cost of a mistake is also an injury. So that's where it's very important to, when you're practicing any sort of balance, you've been taught how to do it correctly, and you know how to make your own corrections, and you're monitoring your performance. Oftentimes mistakes happen when people just are loose focus and or multitasking. It happens with bounce or falls a lot when they just sort of try to do too many things at once or turn too quickly, and that's when a fall happens. So, or you know, just like with an exercise, your friend distracts you at the gym or something and your form fails. Those are probably the major potential causes of a lot of injuries.
You know, somebody once told me when talking about as you're aged, let's just take somebody that's been inactive. Maybe they were working full-time, didn't have the time to go to the gym. Now they're retired. They want to get into shape. And the obvious thing is when you're going to begin a physical program, the first thing you want to do is go see your doctor to make sure you get a physical and talk to your doctor what you're going to be doing. But somebody said something else. Before you begin doing an exercise program, you might want to talk to a physical therapist. In other words, go through some tests and take a look at your flexibility, you know, how strong your bones are, your muscles and things like that before you begin an exercise program, rather than just, you know, become a gym rat and hit the gym right after seeing a doctor.
Yeah. And thank you so much for saying that. But yeah, the first point of clarification is that physical therapists are doctors too. So to be more specific, it's the best recommendation is to start by seeing one's primary care physician. So that their medical doctor to screen for anything that would be challenging for exercise or risks of starting an exercise program, especially for someone who's been sedentary for most of their life. They want to be screened for things like especially cardiac risk factors. So do they have high blood pressure? Do they have high cholesterol? These aren't reasons to not exercise, but you want to be aware of those things before starting an exercise program, and especially in a vigorous exercise program. Second recommendation to see a physical therapist, a doctor of physical therapy before starting is an excellent idea because they can also give you, like you said, an assessment of your baseline strength, flexibility, balance. There's a battery of balance tests that are especially specific to screen for fall risk and also systematically test the components of balance and identify where things might be breaking down or opportunities for improvement. And they can be and prescribe very specific exercises to address those goals that you were concerned about.
You know, Erica, are there certain things like when I injured myself, I had to go through physical therapy and talking to my physical therapist, she asked what I was doing. I told her what I was doing. And she changed my exercise program. There were certain things I was doing with barbells and heavy weights and things that really, you know, at my age, I shouldn't be doing. So we sort of rerouted the things I was doing in my routine and we added a lot more flexibility. For example, I'm doing a lot more yoga and Pilates today than, let's say, I was doing before the injury. So are there any things we shouldn't be doing at a certain age? And are there things like, for example, in my program, we added Pilates and yoga for flexibility?
That's a really good question. And the answer is, it depends. So it really depends on the individual, like what background the individual came from in terms of what their prior activity level is and what their prior strengths are and what they've been doing for all those years before. So for example, for you, if you've been doing a lot of heavy-duty strengthening, heavy lifting, maybe you were lacking in flexibility, and that might have set up your mechanics for injury. And so it's important to sort of swing the pendulum the other way to give you some flexibility and some stability. In contrast, someone who's been doing yoga their entire life may be extremely flexible and extremely mobile, but may not have the strength or the power. So that person would really need to work on that strength and power and form and quality. So that's why it's so important to get sort of individualized attention and be willing to branch out because people are often, they gravitate towards what they're good at. You know, like people often, I see a lot of people who are super flexible in yoga classes. I'm like, yeah, that's great because you're good at it, but that's not what you need. Very similarly, we see a lot of people who are doing strengthening that have very little range of motion, but they can be very, very powerful. That feels good. Doesn't feel good to like try to do a hamstring stretch and not be able to reach your toes, but that's exactly what might be necessary.
Have you found like one of the things that I have seen, I have a friend who retired, wanted to get into physical shape, went to the gym, hired a personal trainer. The problem was, you know, he's what, 67, 68. His personal trainer was in his 30s. And he was having them doing stuff that he really shouldn't have been doing for his age. As a physical therapist, do you deal with trainers who are more, let's say, attuned to people that are older?
Yeah, well, and the thing is that there's a lot of variability amongst the personal training profession as well. There are certain like certifications that and specializations within personal training just like there is amongst physical therapy. You're like, I'm a neurologic clinical specialist, so specializing in neurologic disorders. There are some trainers that can get advanced training in inclusive exercise, so like more adapted exercise versus those that are more interested in sports. So it's really important if you want to go the personal training route to really talk and interview your trainer and look at their particular skill set. And the challenging part too is that, well, that level of challenge, because especially with older adults, we're often guilty of under-challenging older adults. Older adults are much more capable of doing strength training than we would often assume. So it's not a safe assumption to just go, oh, that person shouldn't have been doing that exercise. It might have been appropriate for that individual in the right context and in the right precision and accuracy. So yeah, it's a very fine line between optimal challenge, and also you don't want to under-challenge people, because we hear a lot that a patient will come to me and say, well, you know, I've been doing this exercise 10 times. I do this exercise 10 times. I'm not getting any better. Well, how long have you been doing that exercise? Well, 3 years. But not changing it or making it harder. Like, does it make you tired? No. Well, of course it's not going to work. So it's finding that sweet spot of difficult but not impossible, successful with struggle, and success with safety. So it's challenge and safety. And that's really, really, you know, it's a fine line. And so that's why when someone has more complex movement issues, a physical therapist will be the safer option. For someone who's generally healthy and has no medical issues, there are some fine personal trainers out there. And the American College of Sports Medicine does an excellent, the National Association of Strength Trainers, NATA, NASM, and NASM. There are several regulating bodies within the personal training industry or the fitness industry that also do certification examinations for them. It's less standardized and they're not licensed, so it makes it a little bit harder to tease out. But they're definitely a part of the whole wellness team.
So is there a particular designation that you would recommend for our listeners that you look for in a qualified trainer?
Yes. And so that is a certification. The two main bodies that I know of or that I tend to prefer are the American College of Sports Medicine, or ACSM. And I think that's probably the most diverse and general. There's also the National Strength and Conditioning Association, or NASM, the National Association of Sports Medicine. They tend to be, from their information that I've received, they tend to be more specifically strength training, whereas the American College of Sports Medicine is very focused on fitness and wellness for the entire community, from older adults to children.
You specialize in neurological physical therapy, and I want to address some of the areas that you specialize in, and that is Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis, and Huntington's disease. What can be done with physical therapy to not only make the patient better, but extend life?
With sort of any problem or any diagnosis, three main strategies we tend to use are recovery, compensation, and prevention. And so the three are often interrelated. So for example, we're going to, you know, prevent falls by working on improving or recovering their balance. And if we can't make that improvement, or if they're falling now and there's a fire to put out, you know, we have to stop them falling now, using a compensatory device or assisted device may help them walk better and more safely and prevent a fall. So all those three things are going at once, and it just depends on where the individual is in the course of their disease process and what movement resources they have available. So of course, early on in any stage of any diagnosis, when the symptoms are very mild and there's a lot of mobility to work with, it's you capitalize on what their strengths are. You know, it's like if you're walking, if you're able to walk without a device, you keep working on walking, you keep working on the strength and challenge the balance. And that the exercise, just like anyone without a neurologic diagnosis, it's as important or even more important for someone with a neurologic diagnosis to continue working on that endurance exercise in any way possible. So that may be either walking, doing a stationary recumbent bike. There's even like little pedalers that just like, you don't need the whole bike. They just like go at your feet in a regular chair and just working on that. Anything to get their heart rate up. And that exercise, that vigorous, consistent exercise, is we believe that that is one of the major ways to help sort of extend the quality of life for people. The hard part is that doing research to that effect takes a very long time. And right now we're beginning to see that trend, and we see it anecdotally all the time. where survivors of family members with other severe degenerative neurologic illnesses would say that, you know, their spouse lived another year longer because of the exercise that they were working on, or because they had been working on it, walking for so long. But that's we don't have the power of scientific data behind that yet. And that's more the recovery strategy. So the compensations are can be both behavioral, doing something different, you know, sitting down to prepare a meal versus standing up to prepare a meal, using mobility devices such as canes, walkers, wheelchairs. And that's often a very tough transition for some, or it can be a very easy transition for others. And it's people are so different. The best argument I have had patients make for themselves towards using an assistive device is that they can get out and do more safely with their device. Like they can, with the rollator walker is the classic example. Some people look at it and go, oh my gosh, I want to walk with that. And yet they're sitting at home using nothing and can't get across the street in time because they can't walk quickly enough or be stable enough. Whereas if they use a device, they can take off and walk and then sit and rest when they need to and get out and enjoy their life. The same thing with some patients with power mobility. It's the same sort of process. It is the ability to get out and do more and be around friends and family with using an external support.
You know, I've seen that in not only with clients, but in my own family's case with my mother. She had a stroke. She had dementia. And Erica, she was given 3 months. They put her into hospice after she recovered. But with physical therapy and with the mobility of a certain cane and walker, she lived another 30 months instead of 3 months.
Wow.
And not only that, the quality of life was much, much better. So a lot of this can really make a difference. Erica, is there anything you recommend people don't do? For example, you know, taking up snow skiing at age 65 or maybe taking up golf at a later age where you have a lot of that twisting and spinal motion, or anything that you would recommend that people maybe get some good advice before they attempt to try something?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, because the high risk sports, like, you know, you're exactly snow skiing, probably definitely not the best thing to embark on initially. On two ends of the spectrum, the worst thing they could do is sit at home on the sofa. You know, there's that. It's like not move is extremely hazardous. On the other end of the spectrum, you know, any event that's on the X Games, snowboarding,
skateboarding.
Oh yeah, that's job security. Even like, you know, any of those wheel sports, like those little electric scooters, fun in an open parking lot when you have a helmet, but around other people, you know, a lot of those high speed sports and flying through the air, generally not recommended, especially if it's the first thing you're doing. If you have a lot of strength resources, if you've been, you know, exercising and you've been doing all your Pilates and your planks and everything like that, and you want to try something a little bit more challenging, like a dance class, that's great. You know, try a basic dance class first. But yeah, usually anything with wheels and projectiles or going down things very, very fast, the higher risk, the less I'm inclined to recommend it.
And sort of summing up, a couple of things I'm walking away from here. Number one, some kind of cardiovascular activity on a daily basis, maybe 30 minutes, whether it's walking on a treadmill, a rowing machine, whatever it is, that's not only good for the heart, but it's also good for cognitive function. And before you begin any exercise program, what I'm walking away and you're confirming is a couple of things that you should do. Number one, and especially if you've been inactive or sedentary most of your life and you're embarking on a program, is you see your primary care doctor. Once you get through that,
yes,
maybe seeing a doctor of physical therapy so you can test your flexibility. And who knows, it may be that doctor that prescribes perhaps an exercise program you want to start with. And then I guess a third thing, if you're not used to doing this yourself, is finding a qualified trainer that fits in this program. Would that pretty much sum it up?
Yeah. I mean, I think the physical therapist assessment would do, you know, strength, flexibility, function, balance, all that. And they can start you up on a program. So oftentimes we will even transition people from physical therapy to a personal trainer. They can make that recommendation. Yeah, just because what's helpful with a personal trainer is to help keep you on track.
And you know, the other thing that I want to end with too, and once again, going back to the case of my mother and something that you do working with people with Parkinson's and stroke, is with physical therapy, you can improve your situation and lengthen not only your lifespan, but also the quality of life in the process.
Absolutely.
Well, listen, Erica, as we close, if people wanted to find out more about the things that you do, how could they do so, please?
A quick Google search, first and last name, so E-R-I-C-A. Last name is Pitch, P-I-T-S-C-H. I'm on our UCSF website. There's also a vestibular rehab wrap on our ear, nose, and throat, our otolaryngology website. Has information on vestibular rehabilitation. There's a YouTube link there. There's also a talk on Parkinson's. If you search my name and Parkinson's, I gave a lecture at the Parkinson's Symposium, and you can see that lecture online as well.
All right. Well, listen, Erica, thanks for joining us on the program. Happy New Year to you.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you too. And thanks for having me.
Well, that concludes my interview with Erica Pitch. And once again, this is the new year. You're thinking about New Year's resolutions, maybe getting into shape. Do yourself a favor. Before you begin any kind of program, I would follow a three-step process. Number one is see your primary care physician. Make sure you're in shape or you don't have anything that you should be concerned about, whether it's cholesterol issues, blood pressure, as you heard Erica talk about. And then the second thing you might want to do is talk to a doctor of physical therapy. Measure your flexibility, your strength, and maybe have that therapist design a program that fits you personally and where you are physically. In the meantime, we hope you find this helpful because as we age, well, one of the great things about aging is remaining healthy and staying flexible. And we hope this program helps you in that way. I'm Jim Poplava. Thanks for listening.
The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.